Welcome to 9 to 5 MacWatch Time, a podcast series exploring the world of Apple Watch and how it impacts people's lives. My next guest is Casey List, developer of Vignette and Peak of View for iPhone, a co-host of Relay FM's monthly analog podcast with Mike Hurley, as well as the Accidental Tech podcast with Marco Arment and John Siracusa. Welcome to the show, Casey. How are you?
I'm well. How are you doing?
Not bad. Did I miss anything there?
No. I think you pretty much got it. There's a lot of old and dead projects that are behind me that we don't need to bring up. So I think you've got it.
Yeah. Well, first off, I want to apologize on the record for the first time ever, I slept in on a recording and woke up and it was like time to take my daughter to school an hour ago and it was crazy. but I will say I listened to Analog on the way back from a drive home from Kennedy Space Center last weekend, and I felt relief in knowing that you've had this experience yourself, not just a long time ago, but like recently.
Yeah. So suffice to say, it was the last recording of Analog. It was like a Monday or two ago, and I had left the house right as I was supposed to record. It was on my calendar. Like, it's entirely my fault. I just completely blew it. And I left the house as I was due to record. And so my co-host Mike Hurley, you know, we're Find My Friends friends.
Yes.
And so he tells me after the fact that he was watching me, my little blue dot, like drive away from my house as I'm going to like get my son's haircut, which is something that we needed to get done, but could have absolutely been done any other time.
That's right.
So as we discussed on the show, I went on like a 3-day apology tour because I just completely blew him off and felt so terrible about it. And then, you know, yesterday I was DMing you saying, hey man, what's going on? And I figured that I was the one who had screwed up. Like maybe I'd recorded the wrong day or something like that. And it turns out you overslept for actually a very interesting reason that's worth discussing. But it was so funny that within the span of like a week and a day, it was quid pro quo, and suddenly I'm the one getting stood up. So the universe does balance out, as it turns out.
I felt like it was karmic justice in the best possible way.
Exactly. But what you said to me privately before we recorded, it was a very fascinating reason why you missed, why you didn't wake up. Do you want to talk about that?
Yeah. So usually I sleep, I've got Apple Watch Series 5 and Apple Watch Series 4 from a few years ago. And so usually I sleep with the Series 3 at night, and so I'd use that for sleep tracking. And then I have the alarm on that, and I have it as silent so it doesn't disturb my wife. And that just the taps on the wrist are enough to wake me up, like more than a sound probably. Mm-hmm. And I was up pretty late the night before, just working on some stories and things. And I thought, oh, I need to wake up early tomorrow, get my daughter on the bus. I'd been gone for about a week from home. So it was like getting back into the routine. And so I had the alarm set for 6 a.m., for 5:30 and 6 a.m. And I thought, I'll use my iPhone because like that's going to be louder and I've got to turn it off to make it not make noise. And then that will be my alarm. And I think what happened is I set it to a sound or a tone that wasn't downloaded locally to the iPhone, that was like in the cloud, but there was no UI to suggest that. So technically I had it set to a silent tone, which did nothing for me.
So bad.
And so I woke up like well rested and everything, and it was like 8:30, you know, not 6 a.m. or 5:30. And I was like, this is great sleep. And so I was kind of disoriented though. And so I said, you know, to the HomePod, Siri, what time is it? It just felt like I needed to know. Right. It's like 8:30, you know, I was like, oh no.
God.
And my wife woke up too, and she was off that day, but like we hadn't gotten our daughter on the school bus at 6:30 or, you know, to school by 7 when she needs to be at school. And so we got dressed really fast, and I took her to school. And they're like, why is she tardy? And I'm like, mom and dad slept in, you know? And I was like, oh no. And my wife, Kelsey, was like, yeah, Emily. And I was like, no, I had a podcast scheduled to record 30 minutes ago and I can't even do it like right now because I've got to take Emily to school. So you were gracious enough and accepted my apology. And I was I was really glad that you could record today. So it's awesome.
Yeah, it all worked out. I feel like you and I are both going to be on a simultaneous apology tour for the next couple of days.
That is right. Oh my gosh. So I have one idea I want to pitch to you. And then we'll talk about a small piece of news in the Apple world. There's a lot more going on, but we won't get much into that. And then we'll talk about your experience with the Apple Watch and running, Casey, if that's all right.
Yeah, that sounds great.
So the first thing I have is last week I drove from – I live in Ocean Springs, Mississippi, which is like the Gulf Coast by Biloxi. And I drove over to Kennedy Space Center in Cape Canaveral, Florida. And my car was getting really dirty, and I was doing the thing with the sponge where you know do your windshield, get all the bugs off. And I was thinking, you know, Casey, you've got this history of making car videos on YouTube that's kind of on pause, maybe forever. But I was thinking, I don't know how to wash my car on my own. And I hear that you, you know, even if you sacrifice the back of an iPhone, are skilled in it and take pride in washing your car regularly. So I would love a how to wash your car video, because that's how I learn, like, how to grill a burger, how to things like YouTube. So I don't know. If you've got techniques, I would love the Casey technique.
Yeah, you know, so here's the thing. Washing a car, for those who are into this sort of thing, it's like a religious discussion or a political discussion, you know, like, oh, you must use this soap. Oh, you mustn't use that soap. And you must do it in this order. You mustn't do it in that order, et cetera, et cetera. And I do kind of have a video about this in the sense that I have, what is it called on Instagram? God, I'm such an old.
Stories.
What is it called on Instagram where you have like a highlighted series of stories as a highlight? Is that right?
Oh, yeah, sounds right.
You know what I'm thinking of?
I do, yes.
If you go to my profile on Instagram, and that's my name, Casey Liss, one of the highlights, whatever they're called, is Car Wash 101. And that is a series of like little Instagram stories that I did one morning, probably 6 months or a year ago when I was washing my car. I have changed my technique ever so slightly since then, if memory serves, but the broad strokes of it are just fine. And basically the way I've fallen upon for the last six-ish months is I'll spray the whole car down. I'll take a cleaner to the exhaust pipes and the wheels, different cleaners. I use Bartender's Friend, I think it is, something like that, for the exhaust pipes, which is something you can use on the kitchen sinks and stuff like that. And then I'll use, I don't have it in front of me, but I think it's a Black Magic wheel cleaner. I have it in that Instagram story. And I'll spray down the wheels. And then I use Mr. Pink, I believe is the name of it, car wash. And I'll use the two-bucket system. So one bucket is just for the sponge when it's clean. The other bucket is to get the sponge, you know, like rinsed off after you've touched it to the car. I'll, you know, basically spray the car just with the hose, go section by section, top to bottom, back to front, and, you know, put suds all over it. And then spray it down, move to the next section, suds, spray, etc. And then I just take like old beach towels, which some people find blasphemous, but old beach towels, and just, you know, dry it off like that and call it a day. And then I use some sort of tire foam. I forget what it is to, after the tires have mostly dried, I'll spray that foam on the tires to shine them up. There are some people that have very, very strong thoughts about what tire stuff to use to make the tires look black and shiny. But the broad strokes is clean the wheels, clean the tailpipes, clean the car. That's basically it. And it's really not difficult, and you're, unless you do something really and truly stupid, you're not going to hurt the car in a way that you'll be able to see it. You know, maybe there'll be some small imperfections that, you know, a complete nut job could see, but for any normal human, including me for that matter, you'll never see any of the things that you would do if you follow that basic strategy. And then, you know, I have tips I can give you about claying your car, which is a really odd thing that most people haven't heard of, but you can actually take a clay bar to the exterior of your car. And the first time I did this, I was like, ah, I don't know. And I try to do it once every year or two with our cars. But basically, you put a little like lubricant on the car. It's like just a detailing spray. And you take this piece of clay and you literally rub it against the car. And you think to yourself, this has got to be insane. You know, I don't know if you were of age, Zach, when the ear candling thing went around. Did you hear about this?
I was in high school, yeah.
Okay, so yeah.
I've seen what happened.
Candling, yeah, ear candling has been widely reported to be bogus. But right. Yeah, for a fleeting moment there, we were like, oh, yeah, it takes all the earwax out of ears. It's great. Well, taking a clay bar to a car seems like an equally dumb thing to do, right? But
right.
I did this to my wife's car years and years ago, and I'd done half her hood. And I left the other half alone. And I said to Aaron, I said, okay, I want you to take your hand and I want you to run it from the, I don't remember if it was from the clayed side to the unclayed side or vice versa, but I want you to see if you can feel the difference. And she's looking at me like, you know, she often does because I often have dumb ideas. And she's looking at me like, okay, whatever, man. Sure. I'm sure I'm going to be able to tell the difference. And then as I watched her move her hand across from the, you know, one side to the other, all of a sudden her eyes got really big and she said, oh.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So sure enough. So if that's the expert level, all this to say is that's the expert level of car washing is once or twice a year. You can get a kit like Meguiar's has a good kit that I think is what I typically use, and you can actually clay your car. And I kid you not, it makes a tremendous, tremendous, tremendous difference. You would never believe the difference it makes.
That is awesome. So this could be your legacy, like the Casey Liss method, and it could be a blog post full of affiliate links, and I would just eat it up.
You know, I probably should, if I'm honest. I probably should do
yes.
That. You know, my approach to making bacon didn't quite take off the way Dan Benjamin's did.
That's so right.
That's the next best thing.
That's awesome. Next thing up that I want to mention is that there are a lot of news stories around Apple Watch and watchOS this week from the future. And so I try to keep this podcast sort of timeless and avoid that. But, you know, we will have a lot of discussion about that on 9 to 5 Mac Happy Hour and the greater podcast universe. I will say that one thing I wanted to mention this week that's sort of interesting is that because of the COVID-19, coronavirus, there's some things that are affecting how Apple stores are working. So I was in a few over the weekend on a road trip, and, you know, you see the Germex, the hand sanitizer on either side of the entrance, which is, you know, probably a good idea all the time, but especially now. And the next thing is that, you know, one of the things that Apple stores do for the Apple Watch that's big is you can walk in and try on an Apple Watch and try different bands and everything. There's watches under the glass that you can see every configuration, but there's also watches you can try on. And retail stores have been instructed to only offer that experience if a customer explicitly requests it, whereas before it was encouraged, like, do you want to try this watch on? You know, and it's just like, man, that's the smallest things you wouldn't think about are affected by the situation. So something. Yeah, go ahead.
That's totally wild. And I haven't done any of those experiences in a long time because I'm on my third Apple Watch now, and I presume we'll talk about this in a minute. But
yes,
you know, I kind of know basically what I want. Well, I know what I can afford, and then I know what I want. But one way or another, I should at some point, once this all is done, I would say blows over, but I don't think it's just going to blow over. But once right. It's all done, I should go in and try that experience again. I went with a couple of friends when the Apple Watch was brand new and did that, and it was extremely informative and really,
yes,
you know, put me right over the edge in the good sense and told me, oh yeah, you want one of these. Like, this is very cool. And so I'm glad that it's still a thing, and I'm also glad that they've put a pause on it. So
that's
makes
right.
Perfect sense to me.
It's the smallest things, like Starbucks having their program where you bring your own cup in and they, mm-hmm. they put your coffee in it. They had to pause that as well. And it's just the smallest interactions like that. You wouldn't automatically assume, well, those are going to be affected, but just as a precaution, they are. So it makes sense. It's smart.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more.
Yep. And I use the watch try on thing. You know, I've had each Apple Watch. It helps to be someone who reviews them for 9 to 5 Mac to justify that. Otherwise, I'd probably hold on to them for longer. But this year, I finally bought this white ceramic model after going to WWDC in 2018. And we did this WWDC run that was like part of the conference with some Nike Run Club folks and Jay Blanc and, you know, folks running. And there were so many white ceramic watches at the time. This is before the Series 5. And I was like, I've always been on the fence. My wife had one before, but I didn't. I went like the black stainless steel or stainless steel. And it's like all these people have them. And now I've got FOMO, you know, and I want it. And then there wasn't one for Series 4. So I just had to do it for Series 5. But I also wanted to see the new titanium finishes. There's two. And it was neat to get to go into a store and try those on and get like experience without, you know, buying three watches.
Right. So. No, I have always loved the look, not the gold one, the original edition, like
yeah.
That one never did anything for me, but right. The white ones, the ceramic ones and the titanium ones all look extremely nice. I've only ever had aluminum ones. My watch history in brief is I had the dark, what's the official name for it? I don't even remember now, but the dark,
Space Gray.
The Space Gray. Thank you. The Space Gray. Series 0, as it's been retconned, and then I held off until the Series 3, which was the first one with cellular. That was 3, right?
That's right.
Okay, and so I had a Series 3 cellular, and at that point, I went to the traditional aluminum, not the dark, even though I think individually, like just as a piece, I think I like the Space Gray look a lot more, but what I found was I did get just a handful of bands that I wanted to be able to switch between. I'm talking like 3 or 4, not like, you know, 15 or anything.
Right.
And the Space Gray, in my opinion, makes that harder. Not to say it doesn't work, but it just makes it harder. And so I went with the, you know, traditional sport aluminum Series 3 with cellular. And around this time was when I was starting to get into running, which I think we'll be talking about as well in just
a
minute. And so I wanted the cellular for when I run. And when I went to get the Series 5, you know, the always on display, it'd been a couple of years, it was time, et cetera. I decided to go with the sport aluminum as well. I haven't yet bought a Nike one. I wonder if I'll try that next. But either way, I have now the small guy. That was a very traumatic change for me.
Yeah.
From, was it 42 millimeter, which used to be the big guy in the Series 3 era. And I believe Series 4 was when it switched. Is that right? Mm-hmm.
That's right.
Yeah. So I was the big guy in Series 3. And then by the time I got to Series 5, I have little itty bitty wrists. And so the 44, like, I could do it, but it would be almost ostentatiously big. You know what I mean? So right. I went down to the 40, which early on led me to some very deep and dark battery problems. But thankfully, they have been mostly resolved at this point, and I can make it through a day with one run or with exercise relatively easily now.
That's right. This is the first year since the first generation watch where I've not published a single review of Series 5. And that's I've got a lot of stories on like my experience with Series 5, which is like a review in its own. But it began with I waited a few weeks to get ceramic because it was not in stores. And I had my boss, Seth Weintraub in New York, buy one at Fifth Avenue in like a big long line. He mailed to me. So that was neat. I can never get rid of this thing now. But then like the first experience with it was this thing is dying. Like I'm not doing anything with it and it's dying. And I went through a lot of troubleshooting steps and talked with Apple and everything. And eventually it was a future software update and it was a beta at the time, but that just resolved the issue. And it was like about 50% of people with Series 5 had the problem and 50% didn't, you know, and it was, I'm so glad that that was over. But it did mess up my cadence with reviewing the watch within a few weeks of it coming out, if not before. So, I've always been 42, then I went to 44. I've had 40. When the Series 4 came out, there was a period where I had the Series 3 early. So I got that from Apple to review under embargo. I did not get it with Series 4. So I ended up buying a 40 because it was in stores and they were hard to get. Mm-hmm. And then exchanged it for the 44 when it was available. And I love that. My 9to5 Mac Happy Hour co-host, Benjamin Mayo, is much taller than I am. I'm like 5'9". And he is taller than that, but he's very like skinny, lanky, and so he's also a 40 person. Like his wrist is just the 44 would look comical. He was a 38 person before that, so I totally get that. And you're right. I was going to ask you the first question in my notes is your history owning Apple Watches. I think we've tackled that now.
I think that's pretty well covered. And I feel like I've always loved the Apple Watch. In typical Casey fashion, I was poo-pooing it before it came out. And then once I had one, I decided it was the best thing that ever happened to me.
love it.
Which is very much my MO. But I've always really liked the Apple Watch. And I did wear watches as a kid. And then I wore watches on and off as an adult. And typically, like I think my prior watch, prior to getting an Apple Watch, was... is it a Timex Weekender? It's the Timex that everyone has, and because it's beautiful. Like as a reasonably affordable watch, I think it's the typography is good. It's very simple, very clean. It's a very pretty watch, and it works. And so that's what I was using prior to the Apple Watch. And then I was speaking at a CocoaConf up in D.C. when the pre-orders for the Series 0 happened. And up until the morning, well, I had set my alarm to wake up early enough to do the pre-order. So I guess I already knew deep down I was going to buy. But I figured, well, let me just wake up and see how I feel. And next thing I knew, it was 10 minutes later, and I dropped like almost $1,000 on watches for both my wife and me.
Yeah.
And Erin hadn't exactly asked for one, so I wasn't sure how that was going to go over because she's the more thrifty or frugal, depending on how you want to phrase it, of the two of us. She's better with money, in other words. And so
I have that at home, yes.
Yeah, exactly. And so she ended up getting the Series 0, and she was resistant to it at first. But I think at this point, especially now that she's a mom, I think that she really likes it as well. I think she could take it or leave it far more than me, but I feel just straight up naked without mine on. And I really love this thing. And even though I found I don't use it for all that much on paper. You know, I'm not calling a lift via my Apple Watch or anything like that. But the things I use it for, I feel like are critical and integral parts of my world that I would really not want to give up, including but not limited to running with it.
That's right. Yeah, I think we're in a phase where we're going from where the initial like watch kit app should have never even been allowed. because, you know, companies like even Instagram, for example, made those. Then they weren't great. They didn't get good customer experiences. And then they abandoned them and literally pulled them when they were required to update their watch apps for at least watchOS 2 and later, where they'd be a lot better. And so we're in this like in-between phase where watch apps are getting much better, more capable, but there's hesitance to try something new again over and over until there's one thing that's been, this is the way that we do watch apps forever, or for the foreseeable future. So I am in that boat too, where apps, for me, apps could be a big deal. There are a few apps that are very useful and that they make up the experience of the watch, but it's not the main thing, like on the iPhone where you've just got, you know, folders and folders full of apps. So what do you find
yourself using a lot in terms of apps on the Apple Watch? Maybe one or two of them that you think are fairly critical to your world.
Yeah, one thing has been a calorie tracking app called Calorie, C-A-L-O-R-Y. And I used MyFitnessPal for the longest time. And they're in that category of, we have an Apple Watch app, but it's terrible and kind of dysfunctional. And Calorie is new to the scene. And they built a food tracking app that is like if Apple built one. It's got the standard, you know, iOS 13 and beyond look to it, supports dark mode, doesn't have ads everywhere, isn't bought by Under Armour. So, you know, like all that, hasn't had a history of being hacked and passwords being leaked. And so I love the app Calorie, and it's like, it's in the 1.0 phase where it's like on 1.6 beta right now. And so it's still early days where they're adding features from MyFitnessPal, but they're getting there fast. And it's got a really good watch app where if you're just tracking calories and not all the other nutrient information, then really easy to input it on their watch app, have it as a complication, where your goal is, you know, you want, say, 1,800 calories a day, 2,000 calories a day. And it doesn't have to just be the number that you've had. It can be a percentage. So you've got a better idea of like, oh, 1,000 calories, that's a lot. But it's really just 50% of your day. You've got that much more for the next two meals or something, you know? So I like that a lot. And it's not that third-party apps are bad. They're getting better. Like, for example, I use Things as my task manager. And for the longest time, if you used more than one Apple Watch, Things wouldn't work for you because it would sync with the iPhone. And if you had two watches, it would break the method. And they just put out an update this week where Things for the watch is now a client on its own, just like Things for the iPhone, iPad, and Mac. And so it talks to the Things cloud. And so if you do sleep tracking, you can also use Things now. And they've got a really cool complication that I like, which is like, it's almost like an activity ring, but for your task, where and you can complete your Things task list for today. And it's like, oh, accomplishment. I like that a lot. And, you know, apps that integrate with Siri is very useful because that's, I mean, it's a big part of the Apple Watch for me too, is that you've got the app layer if you need to go that way, but also, if it can work with Siri, then Siri input is, I mean, I use that all the time for things like controlling HomeKit and setting timers and, you know, starting a phone call, starting a workout even sometimes. So if it can work with Siri, that's awesome. And both Calorie and Things work with Siri. So it's very useful.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, I haven't really done much with Siri support for third-party apps, you know, timers, HomeKit, absolutely, dictating messages, absolutely. But I it's very rare that I do anything with third-party apps, other than, I guess, Spotify, actually. Now that Spotify has Siri integration, that has been extremely nice. But I haven't done much on any of my devices with Siri and third-party apps. I probably should try to explore that a little more.
Yeah, and just looking at my watch, like Honeycomb Grid, there's a few more that I just really rely on and would not want to lose. One is called HomeCam by Aaron Pierce, and it's for HomeKit cameras, and you can have them in Apple's Home app, but it only shows your favorited accessories. So if you've got to have those cameras on page one of your Home app, and it's very slow, like it's not great. HomeCam is just the HomeKit video cameras. And it's so neat to be like on cellular without your iPhone and be able to look at HomeCam and see, you know, what's going on at home. I've got cameras in the front and backyard. So like, you know, there's something happening there. And it just feels like that's, you know, a useful thing. The other one is I use Voice Memos, which is new in watchOS 6, I want to say, which syncs to the iPhone and your iPad and your Mac. And I do a lot with Voice Memos where I'm creating a note for myself. I've recorded a concert with Voice Memos and like edited it from the Apple Watch and then edited it on the Mac with like some audio software.
Did that actually sound any good?
Yeah, it was so surprising. I was just doing it as an experiment, and I was pretty close in the on the floor to the performance, and I ran it and forgot about it, and it was like 2 hours of recording, and I got back to the hotel I was at, and I was like, oh, let me stop the recording, and then it was just automatically on my Mac for my cloud syncing, and so I move the audio file to Logic, and I broke down the track, the recording by track. So it's like, these are the songs, and exported them and ran them through just some software that I use for audio editing. Like, I've got a Phonic Leveler and Isotope RX7 audio editor. And then I used Marco's app Forecast to like label them and everything, and export them as MP3s. And I have them in Apple Music as like uploaded songs. And I listen, it's good enough that I listen to them regularly. As like, because part of it was an acoustic medley that you'll never get except on YouTube. And it's like, it's good enough. You can tell it's a live recording. But the fact that it's an Apple Watch, I'm not sure that it was any different than holding my iPhone up in the air the whole night, which I wouldn't want to do. It was nice to not even take like video. It's just, I'm here for the concert and I'm capturing the memory of it, you know. And
that's an incredible idea that I never would have had. And as someone who has listened to many, many hours of audience recorded Dave Matthews Band, I am not too snooty about the sound quality of a concert where I know that it was not professionally recorded.
So that's right.
That's incredible. I can't believe how well that worked. Was that your Series 5 or a different one?
At the time was Series 4.
Okay.
Yeah, 5 wasn't quite out yet. So that it was over the summer. So that was awesome. And I mean, once a month I listen to that. It's like the ultimate bootleg. And then also, and I use that to record if I want to make a note to myself, but my hands are busy. I can just tap voice memos and then do a recording. Also, as a parent, so I've got a 7-year-old daughter named Emily and a 2-year-old son named Rory. And I love just, I had the idea one day, I was playing with Rory and, you know, I don't want to have my phone out and like in the middle of that. So I launched voice memos and I just started recording, and like half an hour later, I wasn't even thinking about the recording. It was just us playing together and him talking to me as like a 1-year-old at the time. Mm-hmm. And now those memories, like, man, they are powerful.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. My grandma used to record me and my brother talking on road trips and like with a cassette recorder. And she's got
those. Oh, that's awesome.
She got those tapes and she's so proud of them. And I'm like, hey, grandma, let me show you what I've got. Like hours of like for my daughter, for Christmas, I asked her, we were in the car and I launched voice memos on the watch. And I was like, what do you want for Christmas this year? And I've got that conversation recorded. And even with my grandma, like we'll have conversations about, you know, just life experiences, and she won't even know. I was launching voice memos on the watch and let it go. And then to me, those are like timeless memories that having a phone out in the middle would be too invasive. Having a video recording would be like way too invasive. But with the watch, they don't even realize most of the time. And I often lose track of the time when I'm recording. It's like I go back and I'm like, oh, that's so neat. So, and then the last thing is drafts for input. So sometimes I do music as like a side project that I haven't never shared before, but I will have like a medley in my head that I want to get down. If it's like lyrics, then I'll use drafts sometimes. If there's like a pattern to it or rhythm to it that I want to capture too, I'll do voice memos instead. But those things are things that I would never pull out the iPhone for and I just wouldn't do. But with the watch, with those apps, I find myself, you know, getting value out of that.
Yeah, that's incredible. I'm looking through my, I don't do the honeycomb, I do the alphabetical list, but
yeah.
I'm looking through my list. There's very, very little that's third party. And, you know, other than the things you've called out, there's a forthcoming app from our mutual friend, underscore David Smith, that I am not allowed to talk about, but it is mind-blowing. And so that is on the list of things that I think are essential for my watch. And you're going to be talking to him. Is that right?
David will be on Watch Time April 8th. So it's like it's a day under a month away. That's right.
And so that app, I don't even want to name it, but that app is incredible. And both you and I have been betaing it, and it's really unbelievable what he's done. I can't say enough good things about it. Another example is, and this is very much like a first world problem and a very unique thing to me, but it's an example of where you can really do the Apple Watch right. So my wife drives a relatively modern Volvo SUV, and they have a very good and very impressive iOS app where you can lock the car remotely. You can even start the car remotely, you know, from anywhere. And, you know, you can check the fuel level and do a few other things. But the tough thing about the iOS app is that anytime you do anything, you have to re-authenticate, right? Like you have to authenticate before you unlock. You have to authenticate before you lock. Well, maybe not lock, but you get my point.
Right.
You certainly have to authenticate before you start the car. So for me, if I'm like walking with the kids out to Aaron's car And especially, you know, if I've got my hands full or something, you know, I have to take out my phone. I have to unlock my phone, which isn't in and of itself egregious, but I have to unlock the phone. Then I need to find the app. Then I need to go in the app. Then I need to authenticate to, well, I need to do a swipe to say start the car, you know, if it's the middle of the winter or whatever. Then I need to authenticate again with my face in order to let it know that it really is me trying to start her car. And it's this multi-step process. Whereas on the watch, because I've already authenticated against the watch and it's been on my body since I authenticated, it assumes, and I think rightly so, that it's me. And so all I have to do is start the watch app, swipe over and hit start. It's done immediately.
That's right.
And it's stuff like that, that, yeah, it's simple and silly and kind of dumb, but it makes a tremendous difference.
That is something where the iPhone experience wants to be convenient versus doing it manually yourself. But there's so many tiny cuts in the way that make it harder than it needs to be. And the watch can assume a level of security that the iPhone cannot. And so it makes it like actually the goal of what it was trying to do in the first place.
Yep, exactly right. And it works so well. And the other thing I wanted to call out is Overcast for when I run. So when I run, I bring only my watch and my AirPods. I don't bring my phone. I used to early on before I had a cellular watch. And, you know, my fear is that even though I'm not like this huge distance runner, I'm only running about a 5K when I run, and I'm only doing it in our neighborhood. But nevertheless, I could be on the other side of the neighborhood and break an ankle or something. And then do I do? Like crawl home? And so that's most of the reason why I've bought a cellular watch. Occasionally I'll go out without my phone, but that's exceedingly rare. Generally speaking, I want the cellular watch for, oh crap, while I'm running or doing some other kind of exercise. And generally speaking, when I run, I will listen to podcasts. I know some people prefer music. Obviously, whatever works for you. For me, I'm okay with podcasts, and it keeps my mind busy, and it keeps me entertained, and keeps me from feeling every inch of every mile that I'm running.
That's
right. And Overcast's watch app, it is not absolutely perfect, but it's pretty darn close, and it works really, really well. And just being able to run with only the thing that was already on my body and the lightest headphones in the world, you know, I'm sure the AirPods Pro are even lighter, but for me, I just have regular AirPods.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and arguably the situational awareness of that might even be better for all I know, but be that as it may, you know, having just these AirPods in the watch and yet still knowing that I can call Aaron or 911 or what have you if something really honestly goes wrong. It's such a freeing feeling. Like, again, okay, oh, it's so terrible. You would have to carry your phone with you. Oh, you big, poor baby. Well, yes, of course, this is like the first world problem. But this is why Apple makes nice stuff. So
right.
If you can get it, it makes your world nicer. And so when I go for these runs, which I go in phases where I, you know, do more like lifting and then I'll do more running. And it depends on, you know, what parts of my body are hurting that particular day because I'm getting older every day. but anyway, I've been running a lot in the last couple of weeks, actually, in no small part also because the weather is starting to turn for the better. And doing that with just Overcast on the watch and just my AirPods is so magnificent. And being able to get back to my house and have my run actually, you know, GPS tagged in the activity app or whatever it is on the iPhone, so I can see exactly where I ran and where my pace was good and where it wasn't. Not that I do that kind of analysis much, and I'm going to shush and let you tell me about what you do for your runs because I think you take it more seriously than me. But it is still nice to see, you know, where I ran, especially if I do it at like Dub, for example. You had talked about doing the official Nike run, but a friend of mine, maybe ours, Curtis Herbert, organizes a WWDC run where we just run in the Guadalupe River Trail, I think it's called. And it's cool to be able to see that run and see like the exact route that we took and stuff like that. So, and I've been on a couple of runs in Austin with previously mentioned David Smith when we were there for Mike's bachelor party. And I can go back to that one and see the exact route that we ran and stuff like that is so nice. And to be able to do it with just your watch is so magnificent. But with all that said, how do you've been into running for a while. What do you do? What should I be doing? I feel like I should ask the expert here.
This week, 9to5 Mac Watch Time is sponsored by FlickType Keyboard, the easiest way to type directly from your Apple Watch. It's no secret that the Apple Watch is a great way to receive messages and stay connected, but the biggest challenge is responding to those messages. Features like Scribble and Voice Dictation are great in some situations, but more often than not, they're inaccurate and slow, or just not possible to use. That's where FlickType Keyboard comes in. With FlickType, you can quickly compose messages on your Apple Watch using a real keyboard. FlickType keyboard works just as you would expect. You can double tap the space bar to insert a period, just like on the iPhone, use a digital crown for alternative word suggestions, emoji and punctuation, and FlickType is also insanely accurate thanks to a sophisticated correction algorithm. Due to limitations in watchOS, FlickType keyboard works best with a messages app, but it's also integrated into some of my favorite watchOS apps, such as Chirp for Twitter. There's even a dedicated FlickType keyboard complication for your Apple Watch face, making it super easy to access the keyboard whenever you need it. FlickType keyboard is available on the App Store as a one-time purchase for $1.99. Download it at the link in the show notes below to show your support for 9 to 5 Mac Watch Time. My thanks to FlickType for their support for 9 to 5 Mac Watch Time.
Yeah, I've got a few things I can share with you. A few things to respond to, too, is when my wife, Kelsey, was pregnant with our son, Rory, the Series 3 was the state-of-the-art Apple Watch at the time. And that's when – or no, Series 2. It was before Series 3. And so it had GPS, but it did not have cellular yet. And so you could run it without your iPhone and map it without your iPhone, whereas the Series 0 and 1, you needed your iPhone for the assisted GPS. There was no GPS inside. Series 2 added the GPS so I could go out for a run in the neighborhood, you know, sync music to it, sync a podcast to it, or not at the time, I guess, no podcast yet, but music at least, and run with my AirPods and just the Apple Watch. And there was late in the pregnancy, was like, she could have a baby anytime now.
Right.
And so I had to run with my iPhone again, and just in case she called, because I didn't want to be, you know, 20 minutes away, and she's like, I need to go to the hospital now. So there was a period where I had to force myself to use the phone again. And it's just a big difference, because anything you can let go of, like, you don't want to run with small things, your wallet, your car keys, your phone, and the phones keep getting bigger, you know, and to me, like, if I could just run with nothing, that'd be ideal. But the watch is the closest thing to that. And it's so functional now. Because you know, at the time I had to do the phone to have phone calls. And then a few months later, you could do the watch with just cellular. And so I've always had cellular since then. And, you know, I'm like you were, I don't use it on a daily basis, and I begrudgingly pay the, you know, nearly $15 a month for the access. It's insane. It should be better integrated with just your phone bill. But, I fear, you know, sometimes when I've got battery issues, I think maybe I'll just turn off cellular and I'll just turn it on when I need it. But the fact is, for me, I think, is that when I need it is not when I'm able to do it, you know.
Right.
If I get hit by a car, I'm not going to think, okay, now let me turn on cellular and call 911. No, it's going to be like, I'm being unconscious. And that's a lot of the stories that we see too. So Series 3 and beyond have changed that for me. And it's so nice. Something that I've also experienced is that older people, so I'm 29, I'll be 30 in October. And so I'm still in the 25 to 29 age group when I do races. And I'm happy about that, because when I go to races, older people, whether it's 30 to 34 or 35 to 39 and beyond, they seem to run faster the older they get. I think it's just that they've had more time to, like, a lifetime of running, and so they're more dedicated by the year. You know, yeah. So older people seem to run faster than me, from what I've seen. There is an app called Tempo that I love. It's from an indie developer named Rahul Mata, and he does this full time now. And what it is it's like the activity app with run tracking, but it's just for run tracking and not all the other workouts too. So if you do a mix of workouts, then you can narrow it down and filter it in the activity app. But Tempo is a running log that's just about running. And so for me, what I was always interested in, I would use Nike Run Club for the longest time, and then it just got to be very unreliable. So I wanted a replacement. And also the Apple Workout app kept getting better with things like cadence and pace alerts and things like that. And the workout screen, or the music screen or audio playback screen in the app. So I wanted to use Apple's built-in workout app. Tempo will give you, like, heat bubbles for the intensity of your run. If you're interested in, like, you know, how you've been doing performance wise, it will track your miles, and it's got a widget and like a 3D touch, like, you know, window for this, where you can see how many miles you've ran this week, this month, this year. And if you have the app and tilt it into landscape orientation, it'll show you how many miles you've ever ran with with, I guess, health kit, you know, basically. And that's something I love, because it's, you know, a 2 mile run can feel like nothing, but if you do that, you know, every few days, it adds up. And so that number in the end is what motivates me a lot. And then there's also, if you can pay to unlock more features, and I think it's like $10 a year or so just to support the app. And so I love Tempo. So, check that out if you haven't yet. I guess the question is, you mentioned Cellular, I mentioned Cellular. Are you also that you pay for Cellular, you know, painfully, but that
it drives me nuts. Like, yeah. I don't think it should necessarily be free. I'd like it to be free, but, you know, I don't think it's necessarily fair to our carriers that it should be free. But I remember when the Cellular Watch was first announced and Apple said it's $10 a month. And I was like, okay, you know, that's, I think five would be better, but I'll take 10. You know, yeah, like, I don't think that's unreasonable. And then I'm on AT&T and I got my first AT&T bill with the Cellular Apple Watch.
Yeah, me too.
And it was like $14.80 or something like that. And I went on like a multi-week tear about this on ATP because I was so grumbly. And it's not really Apple's fault, but other carriers, like I'd heard rumblings at the time that T-Mobile was just eating the fees, right? So mm-hmm. It was actually $10. And I think some of these same fees, I think a lot of them are probably just AT&T being AT&T, but some of them are like, you know, federally mandated taxes and things like that. And that could be eaten by AT&T to make it nice and convenient and $10. But no, that's for you and me to eat instead. And I do feel like 15 is like right on the edge between worth it and not. And I am frugal enough that if it was like $20 a month, I think I would just wear a fanny pack or whatever,
you know,
bum bag if you're British and just carry the phone with me. Although that being said, I have dropped and broken two phones in my life, and the first one was an iPhone 7, I believe it was, that I was putting in the aforementioned fanny pack and missed and dropped it right on the pavement. Like it was completely my fault, but I thought I was, you know, within the little pocket of the fanny pack. And it turns out I was just dropping it into thin air and it dropped right on the pavement.
Oh, no.
And you know, they've got pretty well damaged. And then you had made allusions to this earlier, but I was cleaning Aaron's car after we went. It was like parked in a field for uninteresting reasons. And I was cleaning it and I was trying to listen to something. My AirPods weren't connecting to anything for some silly reason. It was Relay's, Relay's podcast-a-thon to raise money for St. Jude. Mm-hmm. And I just gotten my iPhone 11 Pro earlier that day. And I was washing the car and I needed it near me. My AirPods weren't working and I was running out of daylight. And so I just put it in my back pocket of my shorts. And Aaron's car is an SUV. And normally I would bust out a ladder to get to the roof, but I was in a rush. And so I jumped and there the iPhone 11 went shattering onto the pavement. So I lived with that for a few months until I recently got it repaired. But I had a flawless iPhone 11 for approximately 8 hours.
My first iPhone crack, it was the screen itself too, the front of it. And it was after I took Rory out on a jog with the jogging stroller. And I got back and I you know, got Rory out and got him situated. And I went to fold the jogging stroller and it had the little compartment where you can put things in. And it's not that sealed. It's just a little clip. And so I folded the jogging stroller and the phone flew out and just smashed the ground.
Oh, no. So I actually half expected you to say that the stroller like collapsed on top of the phone and so the phone was like pinned somewhere and then it all got destroyed. But I almost feel like it's better this way.
Yeah. It was so just thoughtless. So, and I wasn't using a case at all at the time. And since at that time I decided, with one kid, I could go with no case. With two kids, it was too much like mental load. And so there was just one thing to not worry about was to put a case on the phone for most of the time. So, that changed the game for me. I'm curious. You do run, you talk about it sometimes on ATP, which I love that discussion. I love when a tech podcast can take this other direction, because I do listen to some running podcasts too. Like Runner's World used to have a good podcast that ended. But then there's also some independent runners that do podcasts, and I just enjoy it because it's like fresh air compared to a tech podcast. but I also love when a tech podcast can pivot and talk about something like, you know, cars or, you know, food or, mm-hmm. you know, you with running. And, you know, it's something interesting. Like you may not assume that, you know, Jason Snell runs, but I believe he does.
Yep.
And the same for Gruber sometimes. He talks about it sometimes. And so I'm just really interested in hearing about, you know, how you mentioned running on the podcast and where it's something that it's not like, I'm just going to try this, but that you seem to do it, with some frequency. So what's your history of running, I guess before the Apple Watch 2, what got you interested in it? And then how, you know, what does the watch sort of do for you that without it you wouldn't get to experience?
Yeah, it's a good question. So I am horribly nerdy and unathletic. I am the stereotypical, you know, well, less lanky than I used to be, but I generally speaking am tall and lanky. And I have never been particularly good at any particular sports or anything like that. And I'm almost 38. I'll be 38 in just a week or two. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, it was a couple of years ago, maybe 3 or 4 years ago, somewhere between 2 and 4 years ago, you know, at this point we had our son, and it occurred to me that me being sedentary for my entire life is probably not advisable. And at the time I wasn't particularly interested in like lifting and certainly not getting a membership to a gym. Not to say that that's not a good thing. It's just, it's not my speed. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And I was trying to figure out something that I could do that would be, you know, something I could do by myself that I didn't need a lot of equipment for, and that I would be entertained enough to do it regularly. And so what I ended up doing was I downloaded a Couch to 5K app for my phone. And mm-hmm. I think this was either before it must have been after the Series 0, but before the Series 3. But I did a Couch to 5K app, and I was looking up which one it was. I don't think it's available anymore, so I can't even suggest a particular one. It was one that Jason Snell had suggested, actually.
Oh, okay.
And basically, if you aren't familiar, because I wasn't, the way this Couch to 5K, I presume it's similar for all of them, app worked was you would like jog for literally 15, 30 seconds and then walk for 30 seconds. Mm-hmm. And you would only do this for the span of like a quarter mile or half a mile or something like that. I don't remember the details, but you get the idea. But over time, not only would you be increasing your cumulative distance, you know, the first run was half a mile, the second run is maybe three quarters, and the third run is, you know, a whole mile or something like that. But you'll also be decreasing the amount of walking and increasing the amount of running. And the way this particular app worked was it would say to you in your headphones, you know, okay, start jogging and jog for 30 seconds. And toward the end, you know, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Okay, now walk. And I don't know, maybe I'm just the personality type that was well equipped to enjoy that sort of thing. But having somebody tell me, okay, now it's time to jog, now it's time to walk, et cetera, it worked out real well. And I remember I did like the first 30-second jog of the very first Couch to 5K run. And I was like, oh man, I'm killing this. I'm going to be running a 5K in a day. And then within like 2 days, it had already started to really ramp up the jogging past just 30 seconds. And I was like, okay, maybe I need help. And by the end of it, I mean, I could run a 5K. And there was mostly for the winter, actually, I barely ever ran. I'm in Richmond, Virginia, and we have very gentle winters, but it's still cold. You know, it's not a terribly enjoyable thing to go running in 30 or 40 degree weather. And I've done it many, many, many times, but I don't particularly enjoy it. And so lately I've been doing a little bit more weightlifting, which we can explore if you're interested. But suffice to say, I hadn't run for a long time. And I've also had my right Achilles kind of, I've been told I have a bone spur there. And so I guess that's the problem. But every once in a while, like my right Achilles acts up and I know, okay, I got to pause on the running for a while. And so I had run for like, I don't know, 2 or 3, 4 months. And, you know, over the last couple of weeks, like I had said earlier, the weather's really turned for the better. And so I went and I did, I think like a 2K run, which is, you know, like 2-ish miles, something like that. And then within a couple of days, I had done another 5K. And so it was just 2 or 3 years ago that I didn't have the stamina to do my 5K, you know, 5,000 kilometers is what, 3.1 miles, something like that. And
that's right.
And so, you know, 3 or 4 years ago, whatever it was, I couldn't do that without basically keeling over dead. And right. Now I hadn't done it in 3 or 4 months and I was able to do, I mean, my pace wasn't particularly spectacular, but I was able to do it. And what I like about running and any sort of athleticism is that it doesn't just fade away instantly. Like if I never run for a year, I'm sure I would be in a bad spot, but I didn't run for, you know, 3 or 4 months and I was fine and it worked out just fine. And so now, I'm just starting to get to the point where I'm alternating, or maybe not alternating, but, you know, doing a little bit of running each week and a little bit of lifting. And I think that that's the kind of scheme I'm going to go with from now on. And it's also much easier now because I work for myself. I work from home, and that frees up time and it makes it so much more enjoyable to do, because when I still had a traditional jobby job, I would be waking up at like 5 a.m. and I'm a morning person, but I define morning as like 6 on. And so waking up at like 5 a.m. in order to go out in the dark, oftentimes in the cold, and run 3 miles, like, it was not fun. And I did it and I was glad when I did it, but it was not fun. But now, you know, I can go in the afternoons and I don't really have anyone to answer to but me and the family. And that makes it much easier and much nicer. And I'm very lucky to have that luxury.
Yeah. For me, running as it totally began with the Apple Watch, but not the first one. The first one, like 10 months into owning it, I had already bought an elliptical, but I wasn't using it. It was like aspirational. And, it was like just one day in March, I was like, I'm going to use the elliptical and just see, like, as an Apple Watch reviewer, what does it do, you know, for fitness. And so that was the idea, was just test this for work. And that's my excuse. And I could even do it during work hours and like keep an eye on like TweetDeck and things, you know. That flexibility was very good. Then when my son Roy was on the way, my home office was going to become his room and I needed to get rid of the elliptical. I was worried though about closing rings still, activity rings. Mm-hmm. And so I took a month where I just ran every day, which really isn't advisable, but especially to close a 30-minute ring, it's about, you know, around a 5K a day. And it's just, you know, you're going to burn out on that, get hurt. But I just told myself, if I can do this every day, then I will sell the elliptical and then, you know, then my office is his room. And we eventually moved before I had an office again at home. But that's where it started. And it was because of the Series 2, which added GPS.
Yeah.
Then I thought, well, I can run without the phone. Let me try this aspect of the watch. Apple was, you know, that's when they started doing the Nike Plus watch as well. And so they were really pushing Nike Running Club as like more for runners than even the workout app, before the workout app kind of exceeded what the Nike Running Club app can do. And so I was really into that community too, where every Sunday I'd run a 5K at least, even when I was doing elliptical. And it just kind of kicked on. And my aunt in Miami asked me, would you ever want to, have you ever thought about doing any races like a 5K race? And I was like, no way. I'm not at that level, you know, thinking that the people that go to those races are at some, you know, Olympic level. And I was just casual. But she invited me to a 5K like fundraiser for the school district in Miami. And I went to it and I was running 5Ks at home already. And I had ran the fastest 5K as a personal record. And at the time, I had lost a lot of weight. I went from like 210 to 140, 130.
Holy smokes.
Yeah. And it was just from dieting and elliptical mostly. And it was much easier to – that's when I learned to run with the weight already lost. I eventually gained back a lot of it after my son was born. Like,
that happens.
Know, that's right. And I learned that it's much harder to run when I had gained back the weight. I've got to slow things down. But that I think it was like in the 24-minute range for that Miami 5K. Yeah, and now it's like really tough to beat 30 minutes. But it was what I realized in that environment was that when you're in an environment where people around you are also running, there's like momentum, like you're in a river, like a stream. And it was just a new level of motivation where, you know, everyone wasn't using an Apple Watch at the time, but we were all doing the same thing. And there was just a push that I just felt that I wouldn't feel just running on my own. And so then I got addicted to running races, like no matter how small the race is, you know, even if you've got to pay like $30 to enter it. And, you know, if there's no medal, no t-shirt, it doesn't matter. I love running in groups of people like that. And then I tried a 10K back home. And this is when I was still in like optimal weight. And, I was like, I just want to beat 1 hour. And, you know, that's kind of the goal here, is to run in 1 hour or less. And it was like 52 minutes. And I was like,
wow. Yeah.
And so that included a new personal record for the 5K distance within that.
That's incredible.
And I was so happy. I was like, this is awesome. You know, I got hooked to it. Now like it's like an hour and 20 minutes or so for me, but, I'm trying to get back to that. But I went from the 10K distance to, just I signed up for a half marathon distance race, and it was just because it was so far out. It was after the 10K. I thought, well, if I can do a 10K, I can do a half marathon, and I'll go from there. And then in the next like 6 months, I gained the weight back and everything.
Oh, no.
I was like 180 then. And I was like, well, I paid for this. I signed up for it. Let me just go, you know, run it. And there's no goal but to finish, you know.
And I
did. And it was like 2.5 hours, you know. So, and then I eventually got up to 2 hours and 10 minutes after a few. I've since ran 6 half marathons. And I've got the next one is in April at Disney World if it doesn't get canceled
for
coronavirus. Yeah. I won't not be relieved if it does though, because my training isn't going as planned. But also I've got this stretch goal this year to run my first marathon at just no matter what the time is, just to say I've done it, because it's so funny. Like people will say marathon when it's been half marathon. I just want to be able to say, yeah, I've ran a marathon.
I totally hear you. I've never done any sort of, you know, 5K or half marathon or 10K or anything like that. There's a very popular and very big 10K in downtown Richmond where I live. And I've heard it's phenomenally, phenomenally fun. And I'd like to do that at some point. Erin, actually, my wife, just last month was at Disney for the Princess 5K. And there's also 10K and a half down there. That was the first time that she had done any sort of organized run like that, and she really enjoyed it. The downside of this, as you either know or will know, is that in order to run through the parks, that means you need to be out of the parks by the time they open. And so she flew down on a Thursday afternoon or morning or something like that. And she woke up at something like 2:30 the next morning in order to get on a bus by like 3:30, in order to be there by 4:30, in order to start the race by 5:30 and be done by, you know, 6 or 6:30 or whatever
That's time right.
it was. Yeah. And she crushed it. Like she hadn't run really barely any in months and months and months and months, and dropped like a 27 and a half minute 5K, which I'm exceedingly angry about, because here it is. I'm like dying to get below 30. Like I can do it. In fact, I just did it yesterday for the first time in forever, but I am cooked at the end of it. And she just casually drops like this 27 and a half minute marathon or half or 5K or whatever.
Yeah.
Like it's nothing. Oh God, I'm still bitter about it. But anyways, but I'd like to at some point, even if it's not a 10K or half, I would love to be able to do that, but I'm scared of them. But, you know, I would love to do like a Disney 5K or something, because I feel like that's a reasonably easy way to kind of like ease into the idea of group racing and see if it's really for me or not.
Yeah, Disney, I did the Disney half marathon in December or November last year, one of them. But it was the same way. It was on a Sunday. On Saturday, I went to the park.
Yep.
And I was like, I'm just going to snack a little bit. And so I did, and I regretted that, because the next day it was all digesting, and I was just like, oh, no, this is the worst experience of my life. And the same thing where I didn't really look at the time of the race. Like, I knew it was in the morning, but I didn't look at, like, when you need to be on a bus by. Mm-hmm. And I just saw a sign while I was, like, you know, going around the park, and it was like – you know, be on the bus at 3:30, and yeah. I was staying an hour, about 45 minutes from Disney, with the family, and the time changed. That I think it was when the time changed, so it was really
that's just a recipe for disaster.
Yeah, so I wasn't even sure like how to set my alarm, because I needed to be up around like 1 or 2, and the time changes at 2.
I didn't even think about that. Oh yeah, goodness,
it was really complicated, but I made it, and then I went home and like crashed so hard.
Yeah, I can imagine.
But that was the slowest 5K or half marathon of my life. And what was cool about the Disney environment is that there were people who – there was a Facebook group for one for just like interacting with people who were going to be there and give tips and share experiences. But there were people who just – you know, they were done after the first mile, and it was just – you know, it wasn't their day to finish. But it was just that level of runner from super fast to might not even finish. And that was just really cool. There were a lot of people that were just walking, and people would stop and take pictures with characters. I even saw one family, go through, the Tower of Terror, because the park had opened by then. and they had time to just hop in line, go down, and just added 10 minutes. Like they were not running for their speed, you know?
Sure.
But there were people who like stopped and had pictures taken with characters in a line that finished before me, because I was doing some walking too.
But Disney was, it was a very friendly environment, welcoming environment with just all levels of experience. So it was a very welcoming environment.
Yeah. I want to do it at some point. And our entire family. So my eldest kid is five now, and he turned five as we were at Disney World. Like, that was his present from us, was,
yeah,
you know, to take the family to Disney World. And, that was in this past October. And we, all four of us, I mean, well, my youngest kid, she's just freshly two. She doesn't really know what she's doing at this point, but right. Nevertheless, she still seems to smile whenever we bring up Disney. And so, and you know, Aaron and I honeymooned at Disney. We did her 30th at Disney. So we are very big Disney fans. And I would love, once the kids are older, to get them to participate in the 5K. Cause it's, to the best of my knowledge, and I think you were saying this a second ago, like, once they're of a certain age, they could do the 5K if they wanted to.
Oh my gosh, yes. Yeah, my mom lives in Prattville, Alabama, and they've got a very beautiful old downtown on a creek. And I was running from her house to a mile and a half away and then back for just to get a 5K in for the day. Mm-hmm. And I ran into a running group, and they were like little girls and boys that were probably like seven and six
awesome.
Or seven, and they were running so much faster than me. And that was a day where I was like, okay, in the races that I've done, it's like the kids and the older people that really motivate me to do better, because it's like they are dedicated, you know, and I'm just as able as them. There's no reason I can't do this. So that's always like the, you know, like the coach in the back of my mind is like a 6-year-old girl going like, you can do it. I'm doing it better than you, you know? So, and my daughter, she's done some races, some 1 mile races, and, and I'll do them with her. And it's fun. And now her new thing is that every morning when she goes to the bus, it's like, maybe like 10 houses down from our house that stops on where the bus stops. And she, no matter what time it is she's leaving, she assumes she's late, and she just runs as fast as possible to that bus stop. So that's her experience so far. So that's awesome. I do want to mention an app that my wife is using now before we head off, called Footpath, and she's training for her second half marathon. She ran the or maybe third now. I don't know. One or the other. Third. And she's going to go to the Disney one with me. It'll be my seventh. And she's doing a thing where I populated our family calendar with just a running schedule that she's sticking to way better than I am. But it's like gradually getting longer. Instead of like 3 miles, you'll see like 6 miles and sure. 9 mile runs. And so what she likes to do is to map out a route of where she wants to run to get to that distance and back. And it's getting trickier and trickier. And so she had the idea of, she was like, there needs to be an app that you can just trace your finger on a map and then get the distance of the route and then have it sync to your watch and give you guided instructions when you're running without your phone. And I was like, that's a really good idea. I bet someone's thought of it a few times. He should look it up and see. She was like, you need to pitch someone on this. And it turns out she did her research all on her own, and she ended up using an app called Footpath. And Footpath is an app that lets you do just that. You run your finger along the map, you get the distance when you let your finger off, and then it syncs to your Apple Watch, and you get in your headphones turn-by-turn directions based
That's
on that
awesome.
Route. Yeah, and it was just like she had the idea from like a necessity, and it existed. The only thing it doesn't do is other apps like this, like Footpath, will give you the distance as you trace your finger along, so you know when to let go. And this one doesn't. And so I DM'd, like, use my 9-to-5 Mac status to DM the developer. And
with
they
the
got
feature
back.
Request.
Yeah, the feature request. And they were very communicative, and they were like, we can probably do that. We've seen other apps do it. The way that we do it now isn't possible because of how we calculate, but we could do it. And I was like, great, I'll feature the app when you do it.
You know? No, you so, jerk. Yeah. Oh, well done.
Yeah. So, it's make wife happy. but yeah, so that's really fun. And I love hearing about, you know, families getting involved in running too, because for me, I grew up with my grandparents mostly. And so there wasn't a lot of athleticism, and so it's just brand new to me in life, and it's a lot of because of the Apple Watch. And for my kids, it's normal now. Like, they just, you know, it's not, you know, let's take on this big task. It's what you do. And so it's so much fun. And I love hearing about how you and your wife are running, and maybe your kids will get into it in the future too. And if you're doing it, then it's going to be a lot easier for them too. I had no idea that like track and field was a thing in school, but maybe I would have been good at it. I don't know.
Yeah, so I hear you. And I do kind of regret not being more involved with sports as a kid. And it's not because my parents like didn't let me or anything like that, but you know, the stuff I tried, you know, like I did a little bit of baseball, I did a little bit of basketball, and there was like a 5-minute window when I was actually passably decent at basketball, and that was it. And so I kind of regret not trying, you know, track and field, and I'm not sure I would have been particularly great at it, but I kind of wish I did have that experience growing up. And, you know, Declan, my son, is in preschool, he's in his last year of preschool, and he does like a soccer after preschool program once a week where he plays soccer.
Cool.
You know, or is instructed on how to play soccer to some degree, you know, as much as you can with a mixed group of like 3 to 5 year olds. And he seems to really enjoy that. And so I just want to make sure that we expose him to it. And I think what you said is extremely important, that, you know, it's a clear part of our routine, both Aaron and me, that we exercise every single day. And, you know, there are days we miss, of course, but for the most part, I think it's fair to say that we exercise every day. And and I think it's really important to set that example for our kids, just like you had said, to show them that, like, if you want to be healthy, this is one of the things you have to do. And in the same way that, you know, I want to go to McDonald's for lunch every day, don't at me, because I do think it's tasty. I don't do that because not only is it, you know, it costs money, but it's also not healthy. And
that's right.
So,
that's right.
You know, to set these examples, I think is very important. And I'm not saying I'm doing a perfect job or anywhere near it, but I do think I'm doing a better job than I was doing 3 or 4 years ago when I just sat around all day, you know, either at work at a desk or at home on the couch or something like that. So
that's right.
I do and think I'm getting better.
There's nothing like a good workout to negate your craving for McDonald's. Like I used to go to a gym that's right by McDonald's, and I would want it when I went in, and when I went out, I was like, no way, I'm not reducing what I just did. Like, you know.
Yeah, and in a worst case scenario, if you get it, well, you just ran, so
that's,
you.
That's right. That's right. Exactly. Yep. Well, all right, I think we've met the goal of a half an hour discussion here.
Yeah, so, I'd say so.
Yeah, I always say 30 minutes, you know, just to set the bar low, and then it ends up being about an hour. So I really appreciate that, Casey. Thank you for being here. Promote your app, promote your blog, and your other podcasts here.
Sure. So to start with apps, I have an app called Vignette. The idea for that is if you have a bunch of people in your iPhone's contact list that are just, you know, the gray circles with initials, if you plug in their social media information, Vignette will go and find their profile pictures and stuff them into your contact list. So, you know, your messages list for iMessage isn't a bunch of gray circles. It's actually pictures, which is very helpful. That's free with a $5 in-app purchase. And then similarly, PikaView, which came out just a month or so ago, that was born actually from our trip to Disney World. Our then almost 2-year-old refused to ride in a stroller. And let me tell you, Zach, that is not fun at Disney World when your almost 2-year-old does not want to ride in a stroller.
I know. I've been there.
So what we discovered was she really enjoyed looking at pictures, but that's terrifying because I wasn't exactly backing them up nightly when I'm at Disney World. And so PikaView is basically a read-only photo gallery. So you can give it to a toddler, to a client. Sometimes you can barely tell them apart. I know how that is. But one way or another, you can give your phone to somebody. And if you lock them into that app with guided access, then they can't leave it. They can't do anything destructive. You know your photos are safe. And so that is also free with a $5 net purchase. My two podcasts, which have both been mentioned, the Accidental Tech Podcast at ATP.fm with my dear friends Marco Arment and John Syracusa, and then Analog with Mike Hurley, which is on Relay FM, where it's ostensibly about where your digital devices in real world meet, but it's kind of morphed into a human interest show about just the two of us.
Which I love.
Well, thank you very much. It's not a great elevator pitch, I will concede, but I think it's a fun show. And then finally, my website is caseylist.com. You can find me on Instagram, Twitter, et cetera, at caseylists, CaseyLiss.
All right. Thank you so much, Casey, for joining me. I really appreciate it. And I do want to stay up to date on your running activity. And if you do an organized run, one of the things for me that's really motivational is when you get a medal. And this happened with my wife. I've got like a thing over here behind me in my office where it's just slammed with medals from just, it can be like a community 5K and you'll get a medal for it for just finishing. and it ranges from like 10K to half marathon so far. But my wife wanted the same thing. So she started it. That was one of the things that motivated her to start running too, is she wants medals too. So go for it. And I hope that you sometime maybe this year, you know, sign up to do a 5K because you'll be surprised at how you perform differently from running on your own to running in a race environment. It's very motivational.
especially seeing the diversity of people that are there too in the community. So
yeah, I hear you. Maybe we should set a date for our two families to do like a Princess 5K next year or something like that.
And, I am down.
I feel like I really I need any excuse to go to Disney World, but this would be the excuse of getting to hang out with you and your family and and also go to Disney World. So it's a win-win-win.
Yeah, this time I'm planning on the race is a Sunday. Instead of going to Disney on Saturday, I'm planning to go on Monday. And
so, I think that's a wise choice.
Yes. Lessons learned there. Exactly. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining me. That is the Watch Time podcast for this week. It will be back in 2 weeks. Also, I want to thank FlickType one more time for sponsoring the End of 5 Minute Watch Time this week. That's FlickType Keyboard. Use the link in the podcast show notes in your podcast player or on 95mac.com. to support the show and download FlickType Keyboard. I had fun with this one because it's a keyboard app that I hadn't tested before the sponsorship, but I knew about it and I did have the beta version of it. But I was surprised at how good it is for sending messages, especially. And if you can find it in other apps like Chirp for Twitter, it's really great. So check it out if you're just curious about like what can the watch do. What should maybe Apple do in a future version of the watch software? Check out FlickType Keyboard. It's really remarkable. It surprises you at how good of a keyboard it can be in such a small package.